This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. If you are a triathlete over a certain weight, you are categorized at the races as a Clydesdale or Athena athlete. And today, we are talking through some training and racing considerations for our Clydesdale and Athena friends. And I've got the two perfect guests for this conversation. First up is our resident nutritional expert, Dr. Krista Austin. Krista is an exercise physiologist and nutritionist who consulted with the U.S. Olympic Committee and the English Institute of Sport. She's a PhD in exercise physiology and sports nutrition, a master's degree in exercise physiology, and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Krista, welcome back to the TriDot Podcast.
Welcome. Good to be back with you guys.
Also joining us for this conversation is TriDot coach Tony Washington. Tony is a United States Air Force veteran who now works as a corporate pilot. He raced his first triathlon in 1982 and has been a fierce competitor in so many disciplines ever since. Over the years, he has had solid results in pool swimming, mountain bike racing, road bike racing, cyclocross, and of course, triathlon. He is a TriDot certified coach, an Ironman certified coach, and a TriDot pool school instructor. He is one of our core coaches in the Chicago triathlon scene. Coach Tony, welcome to the TriDot Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. The subject really touches home to me, and looking forward to having a talk.
Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with the cool-down. Triathletes and cyclists love talking about their bikes, and I, of course, am no exception. I am so impressed by the quality of my Diamond Marquee TT bike. Every detail has been carefully engineered and crafted by the team at Diamond Bikes. My Marquee, complete with a custom TriDot paint scheme, sits proudly on the set of the TriDot Triathlon YouTube show for our audience to see. Their bikes are industry-leading aerodynamic machines, and they look awesome. But even beyond that, Diamond as a brand knows how to take care of their athletes. And with five different tri-bike models, as well as road, gravel, and mountain bikes, your next bike should absolutely be a Diamond. TriDot and Diamond are a dynamic race day 1-2 punch. Diamond provides you with the Ferrari of bikes, and TriDot Training develops your engine. So we are excited to partner with Diamond on some really cool offers. If you are a new to TriDot athlete, we're offering 6 months of the Mark Allen edition of TriDot with the purchase of a Diamond bike. If you are already a TriDot athlete, we are offering a TriDot store credit with your new bike. Head to diamondbikes.com for all of the info and to dream up your very own Diamond bike.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
We've talked on the podcast many, many times about the role that nutrition plays in helping our body recover after a training session. Dr. Austin has been on many of those conversations. So what I want to learn today from the TriDot audience is, what is your go-to recovery snack or meal after a training session? So Coach Tony, what is your go-to snack to have after you do a workout?
For me, especially after long rides, I love having chocolate milk.
Yeah, yes.
It's like the commercial. So yeah, exactly. It's good for you, right? Costco actually sells these boxes of 30 pack of chocolate milk that don't have to be refrigerated. So you can throw them on the shelf. And then when you're ready for them, you throw them in your cooler. When we go for a long ride, we'll take all of our drinks and put them in a little cooler. And then nice cold chocolate milk are waiting for you in the car when you get done.
Yeah, look at you. Hey, look at that. Dr. Austin, what is this answer for you? What's your personal go-to recovery snack?
Well, I'm going to, you know, just go back to my principles of nutrition. So I do about 60 to 90 minutes of training a day. And just given the amount of recovery time that I have in between sessions, oftentimes it's just my next meal. because you're not going to have massive glycogen depletion. I sweat a lot, so I focus a lot on rehydration. So always kind of looking to make sure I'm prepared to sweat again the next day, because for me, I would say hydration impacts most of the rest of my day in terms of recovery. Like, so I don't want to fall asleep at the computer. And it's really important for cognition. So you'll see me lean on something like that until I get to the next meal. It's just, it's not enough to really say, hey, you need to go running for a recovery snack. Now, every once in a while, I do get in these longer sessions these days, and I will tell you that I go running for something that's old and familiar and that just sits really easy. Now, that'll change typically on the day, and so the question is, once I'm finished, what do I feel like grabbing? Now, that probably sounds a little haphazard, but when it's so few and far between, you really can do that. So, you know, I guess I'm showing everyone what it's like to have the more lax schedule or the more, you know, intermittent, prolonged schedules. But I think that's good for everyone to realize is that it doesn't have to be so rigid. And, you know, it's great when we have 5-hour rides and we need certain recovery snacks and what have you to help refuel the body. That's important. Tony did something like that. But if you're doing just 60 to 90 minutes a day, I think this applies to a lot of Tri-Dot athletes, because I know you guys like those short, sweet, fast turnover type sessions. You might have to wait until that next meal because you might not be doing something until the next day. So it's all about energy balance for us. And really, hydration is going to be your biggest recovery factor. If you're like me and you just sweat a lot, you let everyone know next to you that you're you know, having a great session. And I really encourage you to rehydrate after those ones, but know that it may be your next meal before you really need something.
Yeah. So sweat as the sign of a great session. I like that. That's fun. I definitely have many great sessions, by that metric. Living in Texas, almost always without fail, when I go do a workout and I'm done with that workout, I pop an extra Precision Fuel and Hydration electrolyte tab in a bottle of water, and rehydrating after a workout, it definitely helps me bounce back quicker, feel better. So yeah, that's a big part of it for me. I typically wait for that next meal. When I am in a pinch, or if I'm just in between meals, or if I'm kind of having a light lunch on purpose or something, and I know it's going to be a while until that next meal, I will do a recovery smoothie, usually almond milk, chocolate protein powder, some nuts, and a banana in there. Pretty simple. Or a quick go-to for me is the Oikos Vanilla Greek Yogurt. A little bit of honey and some chocolate granola. That's also a big kind of post-workout snack for me if I'm not going to have a meal in the next couple hours after a session. I'm curious to see what the Tri-Dot audience has to say on this. I know you guys and gals have all sorts of things that you like to snack on to get that recovery nutrition after a session. So let us know. In the comments, what that go-to snack or meal is for you. Make sure you're a part of the I Am Tri-Dot Facebook group. And find the post asking you this question so we can all get ideas from each other. Can't wait to see what you have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout-out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at Tri-Dot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy Powder. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. Now, that code used to be 10%, but the fine folks at UCAN have upped it to 20% for TRIDOT Nation. So once again, that's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT. Triathletes come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and today on the podcast, we are taking care of our bigger triathletes. Now, I don't mean bigger as a negative thing here. You can be bigger in your frame. You can be bigger in your muscle mass. You can be bigger because you carry a little bit of extra fat. You can be bigger because you're tall. Whatever it is that puts you in the Clydesdale or Athena classification of triathletes, we want to equip you with the knowledge to have a successful journey. And let's start here today, guys, just with a simple definition of these categories, Clydesdale and Athena. Coach Tony, this is a weight-based thing to my knowledge. What weight places our athletes in these categories? And is this the same for every organization, or does it differ based on whether you're doing a PTO race or an Ironman race or a different brand? Kind of break it down for us.
Well, USAT puts it at, for men, 220 pounds, and for ladies, 165 pounds. But local races might have other ones. I know USA Cycling uses a little something different, 210 pounds. I don't remember what it is for, I think 155 for ladies, back when I was doing a lot of cycling racing. So it is based on weight, but just because you're big and beautiful doesn't mean, it's nothing bad about it. So it's just a great place to race.
Now, Tony, you are a Clydesdale athlete. Is that correct?
I have stopped putting myself in Clydesdale as I've drifted below 220. I'm trying to get down to my race weight here for California. I'm actually dangerously close to 200 right now.
Wow. Okay. And for those of you who have not seen or met Coach Tony Washington in person, he's very tall. Yeah, he's a very, very tall guy, much taller than me. And that's where that 200 pounds comes from. It's just that tall, tall frame. So Tony, I'm curious at the races how this works. I am 5'7". I am 140 pounds and I'm fit. I'm 160 pounds right now, not super fit. I have no problem revealing those numbers on the podcast. I can be public with that. It is what it is. So I am not a Clydesdale athlete personally. So I'm just curious how this works when you are Clydesdale or Athena. Is it that, do you have to register and let the race producer know, oh, this is the weight I am, so I can race in this classification? Or is it something that the race picks up on in like your USAT profile? How does this work at the races?
Yeah, at the races, it depends. Some races don't have Clydesdale and Athena categories, but a lot of places do. There's a Clyde and Athena category at Nationals. So you just kind of, you look at the registration. If that's a spot available in the registration, click on that, and that puts you in a category. So you're kind of mixed in with other age groups, but it all puts you in the same category. And it kind of seems about 50-50 for races. Bigger races have them, but some smaller races may not have them. If it's only 200 people in a race, it might not have a Clydesdale or Athena classes.
Now, when you check that box and you say, okay, I do want to race in this classification, are you exclusively racing against other Clydesdale and Athena athletes, or are you also eligible for age group awards at the same time?
No, you're in Clydesdale only.
Okay, so you're just racing everybody above that weight that's checked that box, regardless of age.
Yep, Zaka.
Okay, no, super helpful to get clarity on that. And I have certainly trained and raced with athletes in these categories, and I've heard some of them, they express enthusiasm at the opportunity to be on the podium as a Clydesdale or Athena, that they get really jazzed, like, oh, I'm going to try to win this division or be on the podium in this division. Maybe I have no shot at a podium in my age group, but I do have a shot at a podium as a Clydesdale or Athena. They've kind of embraced being in this category. And I've heard others kind of lament that this is even a thing, grouping athletes over a certain weight together. For some folks, that can be fine. For some folks, that kind of can get in your head. Krista, Tony, what are your feelings on this category even existing? And what do you hear from athletes who are in this size category? And Dr. Austin, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the perspective of the athlete is what's critical. And the question is, do they choose to compete in that category? You can always compete in a race and never declare it. So typically people are declaring it for a reason. From a holistic perspective, I really don't care for the category existing, but everyone kind of knows my perspective on ignoring weight and just looking at performance. But you have to go back to what's your purpose for racing. It's about being your best at all times, regardless of age, weight, race, etc. And so that's, just kind of something you sit on. I don't ever really bring it up to athletes and ask or highlight it, pretty much because they're usually coming to me because they don't want to sit at the weight that they're currently at. They want to improve body composition. They want to improve race performance. And so when that's why they're coming to someone like me, we don't really focus on the category, but I have had individuals who said, this is the class I'm racing in, or they definitely qualify for it, but have never pushed it that way.
Yeah, and based on our previous conversations on the podcast, I thought that's the way you would lean, of not loving that category is a thing. But yeah, I love that kind of perspective on it's kind of up to the athlete, right, that they can opt out of that and not even associate themselves with it. Coach Tony, as you have had seasons of your life where you were over that weight and you've coached athletes that are the case, kind of what's your general feeling and the buzz you hear from athletes on these classifications?
Well, personally, I love it. I want as many people as racing as possible. And for some folks that might be holding them back, like, hey, I can be included in this group and a bunch of people that look like me can race together. You know, they're in their own wave or something for places that still have wave starts. And it's a fun group back there, and it's a blast. And I just want to have the, you know, everybody who is interested in the sport, love the sport, and include as many people as they can. And for some folks, it's a pretty big, psychological challenge for folks. And I think it helps people include them in our crazy little sport.
There's an episode. It is called Bodyweight Performance and Triathlon. And it was Dr. Krista Austin and Taryn Richardson, our friend from the Triathlon Nutrition Academy. And we were kicking around just the concept of body weight and triathlon. And Dr. Austin, you very passionately shared just your kind of perspective on chasing performance and not chasing a certain body composition or a certain weight. And so, Dr. Austin, where do you think that one ranks in terms of all-time downloads? Shot in the dark. Just take a guess. Where do you think that one is?
Top 25%.
It is number 3 all-time. I highly encourage anybody listening to this conversation, if you have not heard that episode, it's a great one to go hand-in-hand with this one. But moving us on in this episode, Dr. Austin, just taking that principle of chasing fitness and not chasing a certain weight, how would you apply that principle specifically to a Clydesdale or Athena athlete?
You know, I guess it just goes back to instances where I've worked with athletes who have essentially gained 20 pounds.
Wow.
And then we still went just as fast. So when people work with me, what they'll find out is, you know, we'll say, okay, you maybe are a Clydesdale or an Athena and you want to compete underneath that category. But what we try to do is just take that component out and say, how fast can we get? I just think that overall people's perception in endurance sport with regards to weight and its relevance is just really skewed. So I guess from my perspective of over 25 years working in that industry, I would just say I would love to see organizations like USA Triathlon, USA Track and Field really just, you know, help get a message out and take more of a stand that says, hey, you know what, you can be just as fast as long as you train to be that fast. I would just say, don't judge the cover too quickly, you know? Give it time. Maybe that weight does work for you. Maybe it is better for long-term health and performance. But it's just perspective that sometimes we don't understand that even, putting on 20 pounds, we can get just as fast. So don't be shy if you are that Athena or that Clydesdale and you're 20 pounds heavier than the guy or gal standing next to you. Say, I kind of heard on that podcast, we can possibly get just as fast. We just got to train for it.
Yeah, I love that that's your perspective, Dr. Austin. I love that we teach that on our podcast, because I do think chasing health and chasing fitness is far more important than chasing a certain look that we associate with endurance sports, because it's not always the case that we have to have that. So a question I do want to ask, so if there's athletes listening who are Clydesdale, are Athena, and they know they're in that category because they for health reasons, should lose a couple pounds. As endurance athletes, it's a tricky thing, right, to properly fuel our training and racing, but still do what we need to do with our fuel intake to lose some pounds. And so for our folks who are out there listening who are in this category, they do want to lose a little bit of weight. What can they do to do that in a healthy way while still being a triathlete and fueling properly?
You know, start first and foremost with anything that's behavioral, that you kind of know, okay, this is some low-hanging fruit. That's usually the easiest way to start to lose it without ever counting a calorie or a gram or what have you. It's something that even I myself do when I know, okay, I've strayed. And when I stray, it's kind of like, okay, what can I do to rein it back in? And all of a sudden, it does come, you know, back to focus and I don't count anything, right? Barely do anything. Just kind of shift my windows of fueling, make some smarter choices that I know maybe I wasn't making smart choices. But then once you do get past that point, it does come back to where can you put these small energy deficits in through a periodized training program where you can tolerate the deficit and still accomplish the training goals. Sometimes that involves just switching up the type foods you're fueling with, you know, maybe increasing protein and fiber intake so you feel full, timing nutrient ingestion so that the muscle can recover as best possible, and then just making sure that once you're into the heat of the racing season that we pull back on that. There's still more to lose. Leave it for the next go. So it's not complicated, but oftentimes people do complicate it because they're looking for that magic blue pill.
Yeah, I definitely know my behavioral things that I get loosey-goosey on, and it's, okay, let's tighten this back up a little bit. And I'm sure everybody listening kind of has those things. So I love the concept of starting there. And then I also love the other thing you said that I want to highlight for people is when you're in your race season, you have the A race coming up, like that's not the time to worry about losing weight. Like that's the time to worry about fueling properly for the efforts you have coming up. And then your next off season, your next lull in between races, okay, well then let's visit that. So really, really great stuff there as always, Dr. Austin. So Tony, I want to talk about gear for just a little bit. When you are a Clydesdale or Athena athlete, sometimes you're still a relatively normal size and you fit on regular size bikes and in regular shoes. Sometimes you have some special considerations to be made because you are a Clydesdale or Athena athlete. You know, some body types, it is easy to find a good fit in all the things in our sports, but some folks just can't do it as easily. So let's just kind of cruise through swim, bike, and run. And let's talk about some of the tricks to getting the right items if you do have a harder to fit body type. And you are that way because you are tall. Some people are that way just because they are rounder in certain places. Lots of different body types can struggle to find a good fit in the things in our sport. So when it comes to the swim, I think the main one here is wetsuits and swim skins. And please correct me if there's something else people have problems fitting. For athletes that struggle to find a good fit here, Tony, what wisdom do you have to share?
Wetsuits, you can search on the wetsuits in their sizing guide. You look at, let's say Roka has a 6'5" and 230. It's going to say, get the extra long. I actually wear a extra large tall, and it's still too short. Sailfish has one. You put your height and weight in it, and it just kind of pops up. What size they recommend. And I had plugged it in on theirs a couple days ago, and it didn't seem to have a top end. And a good wetsuit's going to be very flexible. It's just going to be like all wetsuits. It's going to take 15 minutes to put on properly, get that all nice and tight in the right spots, and then it'll come off in 30 seconds when you're out of the water. Wetsuits are, they can be pretty particular. Roka seems to be fitting me just okay right for now. I've yet to try on the new Sailfish. It looks like it's pretty awesome. Swim skins are tight, though.
Yeah,
they are made to keep you very trim. And I have an extra large tall, I believe, and it is very form-fitting, we'll say, and it keeps you all in the right spot. And its point is to help connect your shoulders and hips and keep your body nice and taut and squeeze you into the little tube.
Yeah.
So that might be something you want to try to have on or have a great company that has a great return policy. All of the premier places have a great return policy concerning fit, because there's no try places and not a lot of try places anymore where we can try things on and try on three different kinds of wetsuits or in a place, in a real shop or brick and mortar place. So a lot of online places offer great return policies for, hey, if this doesn't fit, send me the correct size. Take out those sizing guides for name your brand, and just remember that they're super flexible. And I know a lot of people complain about how they fit in the shoulders, and they make my shoulders. Typically it's because you're not pulling them up high enough.
Yeah.
And when you hold the wetsuit, it's pretty floppy. That little floppiness is not holding you back. You just need to make sure it's fitting you properly. So it's pretty flexible. And they make them in a lot of really big sizes. There's quad XLs out there for some of our super Clydes that I've seen, and they work fantastic.
Yep. No, all great stuff there. And you have the firsthand knowledge of placing those orders and getting this stuff in. And I love my Sailfish wetsuit. I'm getting along great in it. I do want to say the wetsuit I had before this one was a brand called DeSoto Sport, based out of San Diego, California. And they have a really unique product that is a two-piece triathlon wetsuit. And basically the legs, they kind of fit like cycling bibs, where they have a very, very thin layer of neoprene that goes up over your shoulders, and it connects to the legs. And then you pull on the top that has the arms and covers the rest of your torso. That two-piece system is really, really great if you're somebody who finds, oh, you know, I'm a medium up top, but I'm a large on the bottom, or vice versa. That's a great brand for you to look at that has a really unique product for some of our unconventional body type folks out there. So good wisdom there, Tony. On to the bike, you know, athletes who struggle here are probably folks like yourself who are a wee bit taller than the rest of us. You know, probably some folks who are a wee bit shorter than the rest of us as well, but that's a different story for a different day. What do our taller athletes need to know about bike fit and bike buying?
Whenever a new bike comes out, I send them my bottom bracket to top of seat measurement. And they're astounded when I tell them it's 93 centimeters. They, you know, Trek, Cannondale, Specialized, they don't like bikes big enough for me. So I currently have a Canyon. The ex-CEO of Canyon is 6'8". So I, on an extra large Canyon, my old bike was a Cervelo. It fit very well, but the modern ones don't fit. The seat doesn't go high enough.
Okay.
And I have a big issue with having that seat. You know, the people on the other end of the spectrum, like you mentioned, that having a much smaller frame, if you're below about 5 feet tall, it's hard to fit also. So I, you take those measurements from your existing bike and then look at the sizing for geometry that's available on websites. There's a ton of great resources, including the brands, and see what fits. Another thing to consider about bikes is for your tire size. You know, the bigger the better. The trend is definitely having bigger tires, and it allows you to run lesser pressures. If you're a bigger person, you're going to need a lot of pressure in your tires.
Yeah, great
even
point.
A 28 or like a 32 tire, you still have that. And it's been mentioned before, Silka tire pressure calculator is a fantastic tool to compute that. And I'm down to, on my cyclocross bike, on a 32 tire, down to like 60 PSI, which is, you know, record low for me. It's really nice to have something really smooth riding back there.
Like that's in the ballpark of what I can usually run, being 100 and you know, 50-ish
that's right,
pounds.
That's right. So yeah, bike issues have been, I've been battling that all my life. I have a double extra large mountain bike. I have a 64 centimeter cyclocross bike. And anybody who ever sees me pushing my bike around, they know that the seats usually can be taller than some people.
No, really good point about the tire pressure. I mean, something that I wasn't on my radar to ask about as we talked about bikes, just because I kind of know my personal number, and I forget that number is different based on the weight you carry onto the bike. And I think people forget, like, you know, we see that the online ads for bikes, or we see what our favorite pro rider is riding, and we're like, oh man, I really want a Trek, or I want a Diamond, or I want a this, or I want a that. Like, that bike just might not be super friendly to your geometry. So
right.
So go find a fitter, have them take a look at you, have them take a look at your flexibility and the position you need to be in. And they can help you kind of narrow down what bikes might be a good candidate for your physiology. So good stuff there, Tony. The third sport is out onto the run. Some of the run shoe review channels that I follow, I'm a run shoe nerd. I love just looking at new run shoes, and I probably own too many of them, and that's a problem. But usually models with a bit more cushion or perhaps better durability, more tread on the bottom, are the ones that my favorite run shoe reviewers will recommend for bigger, heavier athletes. Tony, do you find that that's something that's true for the Clydesdale Athena athletes you work with, or is it just kind of vary athlete to athlete? Is there anything to consider when it comes to our running shoes as a Clydesdale or Athena?
Well, I definitely agree. One of the, I think, the really good things that have come out with the new carbon super shoes is the foam in those super shoes is very soft to help make that carbon flex appropriately to make you super fast. But that foam is also going to protect you and make your training and your racing much more comfortable. So that foam is super important, and I think it's been really valuable for me and a lot of folks. Now, one of the things that's a corollary to that is, some of those shoes that, have a 300-mile, they last 300 true. Miles. That's great if you're a little Kenyan 123-pound person. If you're a 6'5", 220-pound guy who clomps around really poorly, you've seen me run. I am really lucky to get a good month out of a pair of shoes sometimes, and it's pretty bad. I usually go too far, but they do not last very well. They've gotten better as my run form has improved. But I always have at the end of the year a garbage bag full of shoes to take to the shoe store for donation back. They look perfect, but they are out for me.
Yeah, and that's also probably a good note is that you know, if you're carrying around more weight, you're wearing through that foam a little bit faster. And be on the lookout for signs that your shoes are nearing the end of their life. You might feel it in your joints. You might just feel a little bit less of a response from them as you go through your stride. And just kind of keep track of how many miles are on your shoes to make sure you're protecting your joints, protecting your feet, protecting your body by being in shoes that are appropriate to you. Again, I'm barely 5 foot seven. I'm probably 5 foot 6.99999 to be honest. But my stepdad is 6 foot two, and my stepdad is in the sport. He's running, he's cycling, he's swimming. He loves triathlon. He goes through shoes a heck of a lot faster than I, and durability for me on shoes is not a massive factor, but for my dad, that's a huge factor. And there's certain brands he's found like, if I like running in this model, but it's only going to last me a month. Whereas that model I like almost as much, but it's going to last me 3 months. Okay, well, let's get that one. And he's kind of learned that over the years and has conversations with me. So really, really good point there. Tony, what are you running in personally right now? What are your go-to shoes?
I like Hoka Speed Goats. I do a lot of trail running.
That's their trail shoe. That's their trail model.
Yeah, it's awesome. We are surrounded by some great trail shoes. And then come winter time, I know something you don't have to deal with is running in the snow and ice. They're like having some kind of super spikes on. They're fantastic. Of course, I just jinxed myself. I have not fallen using them. And then I'm currently racing in their Carbon X3, I believe, is their new race shoe. And they are super springy and foamy. And it's one of the, like I said, one of the great byproducts. That very great responsive soft cushion really takes the blow.
Yeah, and one more thing I'll say about shoes. Again, a shoe nerd here, but we had a podcast. One of my favorite channels to follow is a group called Doctors of Running. And they review run shoes. They write about run shoes from the perspective of doctors who also like running. And they're very academic in their reviews of run shoes. They talk to you about the different features of a shoe and how it makes your foot do certain things. And they came on our podcast. We had a really, really great discussion. And part of that discussion, we were talking about carbon plates in shoes because we all think that the carbon plate in a shoe is there to help us spring forward and run faster. More often than not, the carbon plate in a shoe is just to help that soft foam you're talking about. These brands are putting so much soft foam in these shoes these days that foam would be a worthless mush without a stabilizing carbon plate in there. And so the carbon plate is there to help the shoe do its job and not just be a mushy mess with all that soft foam. And so you're starting to see these brands, the race shoes, of course, have carbon plates in them, but you're starting to see a lot of these brands put carbon plates in some of their squishier training shoes. And so just kind of be on the lookout for what those options are if that appeals to you as a heavier runner. Fueling properly is our next topic here. So kind of going from Krista to Tony to Krista to Tony today as we talk about our bigger athletes. But fueling properly at the races is crucial no matter what size you are. The more body you have, the more body you have to fuel. So Krista, Tony, on race day, what considerations for fueling and hydrating do our bigger athletes need to be aware of?
So, you know, the bottom line is that you can only burn, or we call it oxidize, a certain amount of carbohydrate per minute, okay? So at the end of the day, no matter what size you are, there's, you know, only so much we can do. However, what you might take into consideration if you are an Athena or a Clydesdale athlete is that the ability to get your carbohydrate through your gastrointestinal system may be dependent on how much you're heating up. How much are you sweating and dehydrating? So typically I try to say, okay, are you, you know, how do you feel on these carbs? It might use a high molecular weight carbohydrate with them just because it gets out of the stomach that much faster and easier. And it's not so dependent on hydration status. The other thing you want to try and emphasize is, you know, how well hydrated are you staying? It may be even more crucial for you to get the sodium and fluids in just to try and help keep core body temperature down to help facilitate fueling and racing and training than it even is, you know, the carbohydrate, I guess you could say. So you can't burn any more than the little person that's like 5 foot and 100 pounds, okay? But you do sweat more, probably. So try to, you know, keep that in mind. I've had a 5-footer take in just as much wow. as a 6'5" person. So yeah, so it's sometimes their secret to success is that they can get all that down to keep them churning along at such a high rate, to be honest. We've kind of thought that's kind of the secret to their success, but they just don't sweat as much. They're smaller. So that's usually the biggest difference in terms of fueling strategies.
Tony, does that track just with your personal experience as a taller athlete and how you fuel on race day?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you have a different kind of body mass to surface area for your skin as you're trying to deal with that the heat of a race. You know, we have a big person and or a heavier person and relatively small skin area. Can you imagine a 100-pound person versus me? Their weight to skin area ratio is much greater than mine, so I have less ability to deal with the heat kind of thing. And like Dr. Austin mentioned, this, you know, having the gastric emptying can be a impact on how you're going to be processing these calories. So yeah, it's shedding some of that weight and shedding some of that heat. Pardon me, can be limiting for sure.
And just remember too that, you know, weight loss in a race is relative, right? So if you are 220 pounds, you know, losing 1% is 2.2 pounds. Losing 2% is 4.4 pounds, okay? Whereas if you're 100 pounds,
yeah,
that's, you know, a completely different story, right? That's a pound and then 2 pounds and then like you're done, okay, before you start to compromise performance. So just keep that in mind. Just keep that in mind that you may have to do what you can when you race because getting that amount of fluid into your body just is not necessarily possible. I mean, I can tell you just by working with more so like NFL and NHL athletes, there's some big guys, okay? And someone at one point said, what's with these hydration recommendations? Like, we can't even get back in on what they're losing in training just because it was such a game to try and do it. And you can't do it. To be really honest,
like drinking that much while you're being active, yeah, it can be tough. I can imagine.
Yeah, because they're losing 10 to 12 pounds a session,
right.
And they're like, "Hey, we can't do this." And some of them were like sweating a lot at night when they were trying to push really high levels of fluid, just because their body temperature stays higher, and they're waking up at night with just like, you know, sweat, right? Like their bed sheets were kind of drenched a little bit. Because their fluid intake was allowing them to dissipate the heat from training. But in doing so, it was like they were sweating all through the night. I mean, I don't know if you've ever experienced that, Tony.
Oh, yeah.
But they brought it to the strength coach's attention. The strength coach was like, what is going on? And I said, well, we're trying to hydrate them properly, but then we're kind of on the back end causing this effect.
So it's going kind of from race fueling to day-to-day fueling, because that's also a very important consideration to be successful in your training. You got to fuel your days correctly. Is it as simple as the bigger you are, the more calories you need throughout the day, or are there kind of some extra considerations or nuances that our folks of a certain size can implement?
You know, some people get really lucky, I guess you could say, and they tend to just eat based on intuition, and they'll stay continuously eating throughout the day, or they can handle larger amounts of food at any given time. But if you work with most bigger athletes, they will tell you that they get so full at times that they can't get everything in. And so they have to try and strategize how they're going to do it. And that's been probably the biggest thing I've noticed over time, is that they may drop weight when you don't want them to drop weight, just because they feel full. And so they stop eating. So trying to figure out what is that scenario, or what are the tricks to get all the calories in them. And then, you know, really it's like everybody else, to be honest. If they need to lose weight, they may get a little bit hungrier than other people easier. And so how do you help them feel full throughout the day so that they don't go and ravage the cupboards? So it kind of sits on both ends, I feel like, for them. And then there's the health consequences sometimes, because they do take in all these calories. You may have that much more, you know, protein intake. You might have that much more fat intake, which will impact their cholesterol. It may impact kidney function. It might impact blood glucose levels. So you have to just kind of stay cognizant that you're not impacting their health in any way. I know I had a offensive lineman one time that came in, and he said, "Why are you taking my blood pressure?" And I said, "Well, I need to know the amount of sodium to put in your diet." I said, just based off of, you know, what we're getting ready to feed you guys. Because for him, he needed something different than every other guy, because he had the high blood pressure due to relatively normative sodium intake for every other football player that was there. So you have to stay cognizant of those factors in the population that you're working with. So it's important for everyone, but probably more of a area we hit with people who are on the bigger side, regardless of whether it's height, weight, based. So just something to be cognizant of.
Now, Dr. Austin, for our athletes who are listening, who can clearly tell, oh my goodness, like this person who's a specialist in this field knows so much more than I do, that there's definitely some things I'm learning today that I can implement on my own. But some people probably just want that extra help of saying, oh man, okay, to get this right, to kind of learn how I need to fuel myself day to day for the size that I am. You know, what is your recommendation for getting plugged in with a nutritionist or somebody who's a specialist in your field to kind of help you get this right to properly fuel your training and racing and not put yourself or your health at jeopardy?
Well, first off, these days you can invest in yourself and educate yourself right before you even step to the plate to give someone a ring. So you guys know my favorite app that's out there, the nutritional app, Chronometer. Gives you tons of detailed information, and a lot of that can actually speak to, you know, your fat intake, omega-3s, omega-6, saturated fats, things of that nature. So first and foremost, the investment has to start from your side and educating yourself. Then secondly, you want to turn around and say, okay, who has some experience with these type athletes? I would just say, you know, whoever you're reaching out to, make sure they have some expertise when you message them. You don't have to sign up for the session right away. You're fully entitled to send them an email and say, here's my background, here's my story, do you feel like you can help me? And then also always do the old Google, right? Like sport nutrition and Clydesdale athlete or Athena athlete, and see if any specialists just pop up, because sometimes they'll have it advertised. But again, go back to that step of messaging them and saying, hey, you know, how much experience do you have in this area? I would tell you that if you've got a really, I don't want to use the term older, but it is true that, you know, we're older, practitioner, more than likely, we have seen people, you know, over the years of a wide variety of height, weight, sizes, functionality, and sport. So typically, the more experienced they are, the more likely they can bring something to the table for you.
So endurance sports, by default, they can be rough on our joints, they can be rough on our bones, our connective tissue, no matter what size you are. But the more weight you are carrying, you know, the more weight your frame has to support through every single stroke and step. So, Dr. Austin, what strength training and injury prevention measures do our Clydesdale and Athena athletes need to be taking to stay healthy?
Everyone needs to strength train by my book, right? Everyone needs to do mobility work. And really, I think what I tie it back to is whether or not they are trying to lose weight and facilitate fat loss and maintain current muscle mass. We have to take those factors into consideration. And what you find with a lot of people who start off in the Clydesdale or Athena categories, they don't want more mass, or at least that's been my experience. And they say, well, how can I at least just do something to maintain the muscle mass that I have? So we start with the nutritional side and make sure it's set up to help minimize any type of compromise in the loss of muscle mass as they begin to train. And then we start working towards body weight exercises and then basic levels of resistance. And then typically it's like, how is your body responding to this? Okay. Are we able to start loading the bar? Is it a good response or a bad response? And sometimes they just say, I don't like how bulky it's making me. And I try to say, okay, let's back off then, and let's go back to functional training for triathlon. That's my personal approach. As long as they can maintain the flexibility, the mobility, and get the range of motion out of the joint so they can produce the force, I'm good with it. And then you work towards whatever they're trying to do with that weight, okay? So you have to be pretty flexible in how you design it for them. And that's really anyone, to be honest. They might get picky with you even if they're like my height at 5'6". And they say, hey, I don't want my quads any bigger. You know, I don't have joint mobility here or there. I don't think it really differs. But you might find that a Clydesdale or Athena athlete, especially if they're tall, will have certain requirements. So maybe Tony can speak to this. When you are tall, like back squatting might not be your most favorite thing to do, or deadlifting. So maybe you move more so to kettlebell or dumbbell type exercises just because it's that much more beneficial. You can be that much more explosive with it. So you have to ask them, how comfortable are you doing this? So I don't know, Tony, what do you think?
I agree 100%. I blame my poor squatting technique and bench pressing on my long femurs, just like Andrew Starkiewicz. It's definitely a thing. It's definitely the physics is hard to overcome. And back when I used to lift a lot, I could bench press, you know, a house back in the day and squat a camel.
Those are impressive metrics there, Tony. Yeah,
exactly. I was in Saudi Arabia working out in an army tent for a while. It's definitely hard, you know. So you have to, you know, these days I don't do a lot of very heavy weights. I do a lot more repetitions. But it's definitely, there are definitely exercises I shy away from. Pure squats, I like them from a whole body workout perspective, but I don't do a ton of massive weights anymore. That 1.5% or that 150% that Dr. Osterner mentioned, you know, for me, that's, you know, at 360 pounds, that's a pretty heavy squat.
Yeah.
I used to be able to do that pretty easily, not anymore. I can still deadlift because my arms are long enough to reach down to the ground. But somebody with shorter arms may have a harder time. But I definitely do a lot more body weight stuff and keeping my long limbs as close to me as possible to kind of relieve some of that stress that they have overall.
Yeah. So as a pretty experienced triathlon coach, I know you've worked with a lot of different athletes over the years. You know, is there anything, as we're talking about nutrition and we're talking about strength, I mean, the things we're talking about today, every athlete needs to be hearing about and needs to be aware of and needs to be working on and needs to be working with professionals on if they can afford it. Is there anything as a coach, when you're working with an athlete who is Clydesdale or Athena, is there anything you do differently or talk differently about or make sure you have them consider that might be different from an athlete who is a little bit lighter?
Definitely. It's often early in their triathlon journey. And we talk about going slow. If we're just starting getting into this, we go slow. We want to, you know, it takes forever for all your connective tissue to get strong. Your muscles can get strong. You can build endurance quickly, but your connective tissue, especially if you're a bigger person, can be really strained for this new activity of swim, bike, and run they might be doing. So we go slow. We start out and we kind of trickle into our workouts and we do a lot of zone two stuff. I do a lot of strength stuff, just to kind of get everybody strong and strength, stability, mobility, and then strength to get them ready for their workouts. And we take our time. We recognize we build a long-term patient plan so that, you know, we go slow. We do not want to hurt ourselves. We want some good consistency and take our time. For some folks, you know, they love to look at the scale. The scale is like the worst indicator of performance ever. You know, I cannot help weighing a lot because I'm a tall, big person. I got down to 193 a few years ago, and I looked like a skeleton. It was really bad. It was really, really bad. So I'm much more comfy weight. And in that, I was horrible. That was my worst season year in years. And
I was about to say that, like, and Dr. Austin's made that point before. I mean, she's had clients come to her, you know, wondering why they're struggling with performance. And hey, let's put on 5 or 10 healthy pounds and they yep. become a stronger athlete for it. So yeah, that totally tracks.
Definitely.
So, and again, I know just over the years, you've coached some athletes who are smaller, some athletes who are mediumer, some athletes who are larger. You know, Tony, can you leave us just with a story today of maybe a tryout athlete that you worked with who came to you as a bigger athlete, needing some special coaching, some special encouragement, maybe had some specific problems they were struggling with. And how did you find success with that athlete working together?
Well, we gelled really well because, believe it or not, he's 2 inches taller than me and had about 50 pounds on me. So we started slow and we found a bike even bigger than mine for him to fit on. And we started slow and we got strong and we took our time and we set small goals and some long-term goals and were patient. And we just did our workouts really well. We got very patient with zone 2 runs. Those were extremely difficult. They weren't fit at beginning. So their zone 2 heart rate was like 124 or something. So that's very difficult to maintain while running. You know, it started out as almost 16-minute pace, and which, you know, it's walking almost the whole mile kind of thing. So we finally got it there. And then they started really getting encouraged by their improvements because TriDot works. It works for everybody. It works for young and old, big and tall. It was fantastic over the years and getting strong. And they've drifted in and out over the last couple of years of being a pure cyclist that went from something they didn't really like at all. That was their number wow. one sport, as they were really liking. Now they do time trials and criteriums. It's criteriums are great short sprinting races.
Oh, yeah.
Where it turns out if you're a giant, super strong person, it works out really great. You are creating a giant hole behind you for people to drop behind you, which isn't effective, but. He is so strong that he's usually come off the final corner and sprinting away from people. And he does some flat time trials because he's a giant, very strong person. It's been really, really effective. He did Indian Wells, was it 2 years ago? Very, very cold swim. But because he's a bigger person, it didn't affect him as much. And a relatively flat, and thankfully that day, a relatively cooler day, and actually had a fantastic race. So it was really, really refreshing. And then as I tell all my folks in the off season, enjoy your fitness and do something really fun, did an ultra and just, you know, and super enjoying the fitness and trying to get him back into triathlon. He's still a triathlon athlete. Now that Rundot is really embracing a lot of the endurance and ultra running, we've been able to make that work. And he's, I saw him in the pool a couple of days ago on Strava, so I know he's back. We will find another triathlon for him.
Yeah, what I love about that story, Tony, is, and so you're talking about an athlete who, I mean, you are extremely tall, and so you're talking about an athlete who is taller than you. As extremely tall, he was heavier than you when he first came into the sport, and you know, with proper coaching, with proper dedication to just fueling and strength and all the principles we talked about today, you know, has had success in triathlon, has had success in pure cycling, both in crit and time trial, has had success in ultra running and pure running, and just, yeah, there's no limit to what you can do no matter what size you are, right? If you just apply yourself and do the right training right. And you know, go through the motions, fuel properly, and all that jazz. So very, very, very cool for sharing that story, Tony. Thanks for that. And you yourself, you have Ironman California coming up, and so everybody go track Coach Tony. If you're listening to this episode that Monday it drops, Coach Tony Washington will be hitting Ironman California shortly. So are you excited for that? How do you think it's going
to
go?
Definitely, it's the first flat try I've ever done, so it'll be really fun to not have to climb up the mountains of Mont Tremblant or in Roth. or in Madison. So looking forward to having a nice, smooth, fast race. There's going to be hundreds of tri-dotters out there supporting Kay because Kay made us do it. And it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be an amazing, amazing week. And then perhaps a little wine tasting in the week after that. So it's going to be a fantastic race. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing a bunch of other tri-dotters joining us out there.
So Tony, I'm going to ask a bonus question. That's something you just said. I might have been the wrong person to write this episode thinking about it now, because there's just probably questions I didn't think of that a Clydesdale or Athena athlete might have. You referenced, you've done some races like Mount Tremblant, which is very hilly. You've done Roth, which has some rolling hills on the bike, flat on the run. You've done all sorts of different races over your career. I know you've done Escape from Alcatraz, extremely hilly. And now you're doing Ironman California, which is a relatively flat race. You know, for athletes who are a little bit heavier for whatever the reason may be, are there any kind of race course scouting, race course considerations? Is there a reason to maybe pick this race over that race based on the elevation gains on certain parts of the course? What would you say to other Clydesdale and Athena athletes on just selecting their race and thinking through the implications of carrying your weight up and down those courses?
There definitely is, but because I like to focus on strength, even something as challenging as Nice was, as we've heard some of the stories, and lugging a bigger person up the hills of Nice may be a challenge. But I like to build strong folks, and despite being lugging, you know, that we will not have a 7-to-1 power to weight ratio. Watts per kilo, but you know, a good 4.5 will up those hills will work. And if we're strong, we can do that. It's definitely something that to take into consideration. There's a couple of really sharp downhill turns on the run in Madison that I walk. Otherwise, I will roll down those hills. I'm not a very good downhill runner. That was the case in St. George for 70.3 Worlds a couple years ago. Not a very good downhill runner, and I walk down those hills. So it's definitely something to look at, but I want to be big and strong and not have anything hold me back. I'm a pretty strong cyclist. There's not a lot of downhill swimming, but in the river in California, it's going to help. It's definitely something to look at, as if cycling is your weakness. We will, and we're doing Nice, and if a ton of ladies are going to be going to Nice, I'm looking forward to helping a ton of folks. We're getting all sorts of folks signed up to help prepare for that race, and we are going to be super strong. And those hills will be challenging, but they will be overcome.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
It is time for the Coach Cooldown Tip, and I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite-level enthusiasm. Today's guest is TriDot coach Jessica Qualls. Jessica has been a chiropractor for over 16 years and currently works as a clinical manager in the field of utilization review. In the triathlon world, Jessica has been with TriDot since 2019 and is no stranger to standing on the podium from sprints all the way through to 70.3s. However, she considers her biggest athletic achievement her comeback from a serious bike crash that left her with fractures, dislocations, lacerations, and a serious brain injury. Jessica is a certified TriDot and USAT coach who enjoys working with athletes wanting to complete 70.3s or those that are struggling with improving in the sport. She loves giving her athletes special attention and watching them succeed as a result of working together. Jessica is also very passionate about female athlete physiology and spends a lot of her time researching this area. Welcome to the cool down, Jessica.
Thank you.
I hear that you have an embarrassingly large number of shoes. So I'm curious, how many pairs do you have?
Well, Vanessa, we have a very important rule in our house. And that is that when it comes to things that we like to have a lot of, we don't put numbers on things and we don't talk about how many we have. However, I will say we are very strongly into triple digits.
Oh, no way.
Without a doubt.
Are they mostly like running shoes, or are they just all kinds of shoes?
All kinds of shoes.
That's hilarious.
There was a very early podcast about running shoes. It was very early.
Yeah.
And before that, I had one pair of running shoes. And that podcast gave me the permission to have, you know, long run running shoes and, you know, speed work running shoes and racing running shoes. And that one was very helpful for my collection.
So we just need to blame Andrew for all of this.
Yeah, we can blame anybody, anybody but me. But no, it's definitely a wide array.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I'm also very excited for the tip that you share with your athletes that you feel is important for everybody to hear. So what do you have for us today?
Solid plan A and plan B. I honestly think that this is arguably one of the most important tools that we can have in our toolbox. You know, triathletes, we have these just massive goals and just perfect visions of how we want things to go. And very rarely will life allow those things to unfold the way that we think it should, or the way we should, or we want it to look. Sometimes some athletes, with even the smallest disruption in that overall vision, it can trigger this sense of unraveling. And they'll become very overwhelmed to the point that they just literally don't know what to do.
Hmm.
And, you know, once that happens, this usually will spiral into anxiety, poor decisions, performance dips, and unfortunately, a lot of times, just temptations to quit or just quitting. So that's why very, very solid, well thought out plan B is so important. Now, I'm not talking about just like a backup plan, just some afterthought of a plan. I mean a very defined plan that is part of the overall vision, that is just as thought out and just as planned as plan A.
When you're with an athlete who has this vision of how they want their race to go, how do you go out making plan A, B, C, and D? And all the way to Z.
Well, a big part of that is determining where their fears are. We can look at, you know, certain athletes. I was talking to an athlete the other day whose biggest fear, they felt like they had the bike and the run and everything very worked out. And while we're going to also come up with plan Bs for those, their biggest fear was the swim. And we came up with multiple plans that they could use during the swim, because we know that that's already where their anxieties are going to be. So we want to make sure we're addressing that one. But, you know, I mean, when the primary vision starts to go crazy, having that predetermined point at which we're going to switch to a different plan, it can be a game changer. And that's why it's so important to make sure it's a very solid plan. It gives the athletes just a good sense of control over a situation that they are already nervous about, or that they may have already put a lot of negative focus on. So when we establish that solid B, it's just part of the overall plan. And that's what I think is so important, is that it's not a backup. It's part of the overall plan. So they'll be more comfortable making those adjustments if the main vision isn't going as planned. So when we're going to pivot to plan B, it's not just like a scramble to figure out what we're going to do now that everything's falling apart. There's no second guessing. You just simply execute the predetermined steps.
Let's just say, for example, plan A on the bike is to hit a certain wattage and something happens, like it gets super windy. What would you then consider for plan B? Would it be a heart rate zone, or would it be lower wattage, or how would you go about organizing that for the athlete?
It's really going to depend on the athlete. And we do this. I think we should be doing this for assessments, long runs, race rehearsals, race days, everything. But the bike is a really good example, especially like, okay. So let's say like it's a race rehearsal bike, and the plan A is to follow race X to a T, and we're going to go out and we're going to hit those watts just perfect. We're never going to fall more than three, you know, numbers below that prescribed watts. We're going to go into our plan transition that we have set up and head out on a run with the perfect pace. That's plan A,
okay.
Right? Plan A is perfect. But we start hitting, like you said, some like headwinds that are just so big, and it's taking all of our energy out of us. So, you know, if it's obvious that, you know, after they have tried everything to re-engage, and despite their best efforts, they're not able to get back to those like prescribed watts from the RaceX, from plan A, if they stay out of plan A for a specific amount of time, let's say we've determined for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is for that athlete, you have been unable to get back on track with plan A. After that amount of time that they've already determined, they're going to switch back into plan B.
Okay.
Plan B is your heart rate. Say okay. for them, we're going to hit the heart rate zone of X to X. That amount's already known. They know exactly when they're going to switch to plan B. They don't got to think about it. And, you know, at that point, they're not thinking about watts anymore. They're maintaining that specific heart rate zone. And, you know, like I said, those zones and those cues to when to go to plan B has already been established. Mm-hmm. And depending on the athlete, you know, sometimes in a really bad situation, we may need a plan C where now we're watching cadence.
Okay.
You know, it really just depends on, we will put all of those in there so that they know if this keeps going bad, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
We're going to do this. So it really prevents them from spiraling, and, you know, this way they can adapt and refocus and just keep moving forward. And it's not about surviving the race anymore. It's about accepting this challenge and being successful in it so they can stay in control and just adapt to the moment.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.